time now for News Talk WANI Sports, brought to you by Top Hat Chimney Sweeps. If you have a chimney, make sure it's inspected by the best. Top Hat Chimney Sweeps of Auburn. With 20 years of experience, they are the pros.
Double D Mondays. Daryl Dapperich joins me on the WANI hotline as he had his hands full last Monday, so he couldn't be with us. So now he's with us this Monday.
Yeah, glad to be here, man. I missed our little chat, so I'm glad to get right back on the horse and get back in the rotation.
I'm not going to go into detail. I know you kind of got me tickled a little bit during the conversation prior to coming on the air. So I am glad that everything has been rectified with your vehicle, and we're not going to throw anybody under the bus. But
No, we won't do that. But let's just say I was a very unhappy consumer for a couple days there, but it's taken care of now.
Daryl pulled I call it a Johnny Taylor, my father, who has done this before. He literally has done this. That's why I laughed, as Daryl said, I started just handing the keys. Say, you know what?
Yeah,
it's all yours.
I was that close. I was that close. Just going, you can have it. Go, you know, I'm moving on. It's not meant to be, but it all got worked out. I hate that I missed last Monday, but I had to be there at a certain time and get that taken care of. So, but I'm glad it's behind me, and I'm ready to talk sports with my good buddy Ben Taylor.
I want to talk about the College World Series here momentarily, but I do want to talk a little bit about. I know you're more of a Pirates fan, right? Than you are.
Yes, absolutely.
Anything else? But the Braves and Reds played in Cincinnati. Braves took 2 of 3 from the Reds. Ellie De La Cruz is everything everybody has talked about.
Yes. It's rare that a kid lives up to the hype, and I've been hearing about him for a while, and then when they called him up after the Super 2 arbitration thing expired, which a lot of these small market teams do, I thought there was going to be an adjustment, and the kid hits for the cycle, last week, and does it within the first 6 innings, which is just ungodly. So it's amazing how we have grown up watching what we consider to be generational talent and generations. That's what makes baseball so wonderful, is that our fathers and our grandfathers watched those dudes, the DiMaggio's, the Ted Williams, the Hank Aaron's, Willie Mays. We're fortunate to live in an age where we can see guys like Ohtani and Trout, and now this kid. I mean, he's definitely, when you look up five-tool player in the dictionary, with that word gets thrown around a lot. He's it. I mean, he is it. And so Cincinnati, good for them. I'm a little jealous. I ain't gonna lie to you. Yeah. When I see a small market team, a few hours away from Pittsburgh, having that immediate success with their prospects, and then the Pirates call up their prospects that go 0-23. except, Henry Davis, who's the number one pick overall, he's done pretty well. But still, Cincinnati's got that, I don't know, the foundation now where they've got good young talent. They've got them, they don't have to expand their payroll. They can do that at the trade deadline. But De La Cruz is everything that he is cracked up to be, trust me.
Yes, he is. He was so impressive to watch. That's the first time I've had a chance to watch him. I've seen highlights, SportsCenter, that kind of thing, but I'm not a Cincinnati Reds fan. And so with the Braves and Reds playing this weekend, and of course the first game I watch, he hits for the cycle, like you said, within the first six innings. But, I told everybody, I said, or my buddies, I said, those of you watching this Reds-Braves game or Reds-Braves series, I said, between Acuna and De La Cruz, I said, you have got some very, young stars in the making that are already at the top. I mean, Acuna has talked about that, people have said he may be the best in baseball, which he very well could be, because De La Cruz is still a rookie, so he's going to have some growing pains at some point. Somebody's going to figure out. But speed kills, along with his play in the field. I mean, he does well out at short, so he still is going to be something to marvel out there. But I want to put this in perspective, too, because you can remember this. Acuna right now is on pace. Everybody goes, all he does is steal bases. I said, okay, well, right now he's on pace to steal right around 60 bases for the year. Ricky Henderson stole 130.
I know. It was ungodly. Tim Raines stole over 100. Vince Coleman. That's the era of baseball we grew up in the 80s. And I will just say this, kind of a little fun sidebar. I've got to go out of town on business this week to Boston, have an opportunity to go to Fenway, always catch a game they're playing the Marlins at the game I'm going to.
Yeah.
So the Pirates played the Marlins this last week, and I guess Arias, who is a really good player, hitting 400, hits a home run against the Pirates, really, really just showboats it, flips his bat way up in the air, walks around the bases. This day and age, I get it. I know this young talent and all that. I'm just old school. Pirates never made him wear one. I'm wondering if I can get close enough to the batting cages Wednesday and just be do it myself.
Hey, grumpy,
one of those souvenir baseballs, right, that the Red Sox just put one right in the ribs.
Yeah, as I can read the headlines now in the Boston Tribune. Grumpy old man gets kicked out of Fenway.
Yeah, exactly. But that kind of stuff just drives me crazy. I'm too old school with that, and I just respect the game a little bit. I get the excitement. I get the hype, and I get the young kids. It's a different generation. But I also feel like at some point you are showing up the pitcher. And again, if the pitcher strikes you out and does that same crap on the mound, you don't see that often. But if they did, I would expect the same thing, you know, as far as you give it as good as you get. But I don't know. It's just – and then I just thought it was ironic that I'm sitting there fuming watching the game Saturday. Fuming almost ruins my day because they don't do anything, and he's allowed to rub it in the Pirates' faces. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm fixing to see that Joker in about 5 days. Maybe the Red Sox will take care of it. Yeah. Maybe they'll let him wear one.
I don't see that happening, Daryl. I'm sorry to say. I think that's not going to happen. Well, speaking of baseball, College World Series, two best teams in college baseball have met and split, and we head to final game tonight. Your Pirates could be looking at their starting pitcher taking the hill for the LSU Tigers tonight.
Yeah, that's changed. That narrative has changed. I know some guys still that work within the organization. I follow a lot of guys, media, that cover the Pirates, and that it has absolutely shifted from it being a done deal 2 weeks ago with them taking Cruz to now leaning towards Skeens and him, because it's so hard to get an ace. You know, Walker Buehler comes in the later rounds. Garrett Cole, the Pirates took him when he was. It is very hard to find that dude that's an ace. Strasburg, some of those guys. It's a crapshoot with a college pitcher. Mark Pryor really never lived up to his potential. Strasburg had the arm injuries. But if I'm the Pirates, the reason why I take Skeens is because I think he gets on your ball club and on your major league roster faster. Mm-hmm. And they need help quicker. So you could put him in the bullpen this year.
Yep.
A lot of, you know, the kid, what's the kid from Tennessee that was pitching for the Angels? Ben, I can't think of his last name, but he had some arm issues. But he was pitching in the bullpen this year, a year after being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they can make a more immediate impact, and that's why I think the Pirates will probably take him. But what a great game. What a great series. And the way the Florida bats came alive yesterday, holy cow. I mean, nobody saw that. That was just unbelievable hitting display.
They came alive. But I also said, too, I mean, once it got out of hand, I think that LSU teetered on who they were going to be putting on the mound so that way they could save some for today. Because not that they gave up, but, boy, once you get behind by 7, 8, 9 runs, which is not a lot in college baseball, I mean, that can turn in a heartbeat.
Right. And the wind was blowing out, which is very rare at that stadium. Rosenblatt, you'd see a lot of home runs back of the day in Omaha. But this new ballpark – it's a minor league part, is where homers go to die. You just don't see them. So with the wind blowing out, that looked like the 80s College World Series yesterday.
Yeah, and it was fun to watch. I mean, it to a certain point, and then after that, once it got out of hand, I flipped over and started watching something else. And then when I say, as a matter of fact, I think I told Riley last hour, I think I quit when Florida got up 12 runs, and I moved it. And then I came, when I was coming in this morning, ESPN Radio had the final score, and I was like, holy moly, they put more on the board after I quit watching it last night.
It's amazing. Everything that I've seen, too, that Skeens probably will not start today is what I've heard, that he'll come out of the bullpen and give you 4 or 5 innings. And then I did the exact same thing you did at 4 p.m. I just turned the game off. And literally, when I turned it off, I was fortunate enough, PBS was running their – they were doing their annual thing where they show the baseball, the documentary, the Ken Burns Baseball Series, which a baseball dork like me, I mean, I've watched that thing maybe 10 times, and every time it's on, I can watch it. And it was actually episode 1, which is really old school.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'd rather watch this than this game getting out of hand. So it'll be fun theater today to watch that game. And I love that it's game 3, and it's everything's on the line, man. Everything's on the line. LSU didn't take care of it and wrap it up. I love the elimination winner-take-all games, and that's who we get. We get like a true national championship game like you do in every other sport.
Yeah, I absolutely love it, too. So I will say, and before we start talking about Auburn, I want to shift gears a little bit to Alabama. Quinterly announces yesterday he is going to enter the transfer portal and probably go to Villanova. And that is what the latest reports I saw last night from Alabama. I even tweeted, I said, that's funny. He announced he was coming back only to transfer. What's going on in Tuscaloosa?
I don't know. And, you know, they felt really, really good about the kid, the Stevenson kid that just reclassified that they got that they beat North Carolina for, and that is a big get. But I don't think that kid at 16, 17 years old, when you reclassify like that as a forward, a power forward, who needs some strength and maturity, is ready to help you right away.
Agreed.
They're still waiting on the Nelson kid from North Dakota State who hasn't gotten into school yet. And I'm sure they're waiting on him to take some classes and to clean up some things. But he commits, but it's not enrolled. And then you lose what you consider to be your starting guard, who is at this point, what, 38 years old? Is that how old Quinterly is? There's guards in the NBA that have been playing 10 years that are younger than him. But I just don't. It's weird. It's very strange that he makes that big grand announcement that he's back, sitting in a chair with all the trophies, and then a week later, you know, he's talking about transferring. And Memphis and Miami were also a couple names thrown out there that could be possibilities. But to go back to Villanova would be really, really strange. I mean, that is, you talk about full circle. So
yeah,
I don't know. I that one came out of left field and really shocked me. It really did.
Yeah, and when I saw that yesterday, I was like, "Are you serious right now? Like, he made this big deal out of coming back, and then now he wants to leave. Like, what took place? Is it a conversation between he and the coaching staff? Is it him just not being happy at the school? Like, it really, there were so many questions that popped up, and I laughed at it in jest yesterday whenever it came out, because I was like, that's funny. He announced he's coming back and then he leaves. But in all honesty, it really, somebody said it's not like Flanagan. Like, Flanagan has put a lot of time in here. He was supposed to get drafted. He got hurt. His dad now is coaching at Ole Miss. He's going to follow his father to Ole Miss. These two situations are nowhere similar, in my opinion.
No, the undercurrents and the tea leaves for Flanagan were there for a long time. That when this season ended, he was gone.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of not if, but where. With Quinterly making that big announcement and putting that on Twitter, on social media, that he was back just a week ago, that was absolutely completely different and came out of left field. So, interesting to say the least. They better go get him another guard, and I don't know how many there are out there that can come in and be an immediate starter for you.
And now we move back to Auburn, and I want to touch on football a little bit. And Zach has talked about this with Locked On. He mentioned it with me on Locked On Fridays when he was in this past Friday. The blue chip ratio. And I don't know if you've followed this very much.
I have. Not a lot, but just kind of casually.
Because I put him on the spot, and I said, okay, so Auburn's inside the blue chip ratio. I said, so, Zach, are you calling it now? Does Auburn win a national title next year or not? And and he says, no.
Well, they're barely inside of it, are they?
They are. They are just inside of it.
My understanding was that Harsin almost had Auburn out of the blue chip ratio. Mm-hmm. So, they were in the potato chip ratio.
Yeah.
With Arson. Yeah, because potatoes, man.
No pun intended.
So, yeah, I think there's something that I was talking about, too, with some of the guys with on the line this week about how Auburn hasn't had a coach, when you talk about this blue chip ratio, for a while, that has had both aspects, in my opinion, of components that you need to win a national championship. Like, Tuberville did a really good job developing players and getting them to the league, but his recruiting classes weren't consistently top 12, top 10.
Nope.
Gus Malzahn, to his credit, had a lot of great recruiting classes. They were consistently in the top 12, top 10 in the country, top 5, top 6 in the SEC, which shows you how tough the league is. But yet, his development record was not there. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while, probably since Pat Dye, that you had great top 10 recruiting classes, top 15 recruiting classes every year, but you also develop those players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Hugh Freeze, Auburn has a coach that is able to do both. I think you're not going to beat him on the recruiting trail. He's going to work with a ton of effort and tirelessly to get on the recruiting trail. But then I also think him and his coaching staff do a great job of developing players and putting them in the right places at the right time to succeed. That's why I think, now look, we got a lot of work to do. The season hasn't even started. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a track record there where Auburn, for the first time, can have that convergence and have the stars aligned, where you've got a good recruiting coach and also a good head coach that knows how to develop players. It's been a while since, in my opinion, Auburn's had both.
No, you're correct. And I tell this story about Tuberville all the time. This was back when I was closer to the program and following it more and actually, you know, covering it day to day and going to practices and all that, which, you know, I don't do anymore. But I did that during the Tuberville administration. And I said that was what was funny. But you mentioned his recruiting classes not being up to par. I said, well, that goes back to the story. One of the best stories I ever heard. I mean, he shows up to recruit a kid during a basketball game. A high school basketball game, just to sit and visit with a kid in the stands, and he sees the athleticism of two kids on the floor, and he basically goes down there and asks them if they play football, because he knew he could develop them into something a little bit later on. So
that is
something that Tuberville did, where I don't think he paid attention to stars as much as he paid attention to potential. And and I'll give him credit for that. I thought that was pretty amazing. He turned some very good, you know, high school athletes into football players once he brought them to the Plains because of the development. And that is one thing that Auburn has missed. You are correct. During the Dye administration, I mean, the stars weren't a thing then. I mean, if you look back on it now, I mean, you'd say, hey, Bo was a five star, but
recruiting services and all that. You're absolutely right. Tuberville, to his credit, had a couple of classes that were elite. He did have, I'm talking about, like, you know, the consistency year in, year out. I mean, he had the classes where he had Jason Campbell, Carlos Rogers, Cadillac.
Yep.
All those guys were five stars or close to it. One good thing about Tuberville is he got a lot of four-star, high-star linemen, too. The Lee Zimbas, those kind of guys. Mm-hmm. He got some higher-rate offensive linemen. Where he seemed to develop kids and get those three stars were like linebackers and defensive linemen. He would get those kids that were three stars and were a little underrated, and then, man, he'd elevate them, like Dontarius Thomases, those kind of guys that would go on and play in the league, Carlos Dansby. So, interesting. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, just his whole – I remember him getting Ronnie Daniels.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal when his first recruiting class getting Ronnie Daniels. And Ronnie Daniels, in my opinion, would have been one of the best receivers to ever set foot on Auburn's campus if he could have played more than 2 years. He was a freak.
Yeah.
And had two great years. But he got him. He got some JUCO kids, Rudy Johnson. So he did his job. It's just consistently to have to compete like with the Kirby's and the Sabins and those kind of guys, you know, you're going to have to do it every year. And I think we have the guy. Auburn has the guy to do both aspects of that.
I completely agree. It's an arms race now, and you got to have a guy that can sell the program and sell what he's doing. So, Darrell, as always, I greatly appreciate your time. Keep your keys, and so that way you can keep puttering around.
Keep my cool, too, at Fenway, right? And you don't want to be reading anything.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't want to see grumpy old man gets tossed out of Fenway. I'm going to know who it is before they even mention the name.
You would love it if an AP report came across the wire Thursday morning when you were getting ready to hear the news that there's Darrell. Face.
Listen, I'm kind of hoping for it, and not necessarily to see the picture and to see the, but more or less to get the response next Monday whenever you come back on. How about that?
I'm over it now. I went to church yesterday morning, so all the anger has passed.
Yeah, until you lay eyes on him, we shall see.
Have a great week, brother.
You too, my man. Safe travels.
Take care.
Darrell Dapridge, Double D Mondays on Auburn Opelika this morning. The Positive Thought with Dr. George Matheson. That's next.
Ben Taylor. Auburn Opelika this morning.
News Talk WKNI.